Take a network break. Help yourself to a virtual donut as we peruse this week's tech and IT news. Greg Farrow is wandering around North Africa, so I'm pleased to welcome Jonna Till Johnson. Jonna is a founder and CEO of Numertes. She's also co-host of the Heavy Strategy podcast here on Packet Pusher, so hopefully she is a familiar voice to you. We're sponsored today by Palo Alto Networks. You can see how ZTNA 2.0, Cloud Secure Web Gateway, and SD-WAN deliver exceptional security and ROI. Palo Alto Networks has produced a virtual event where you can hear how the latest innovations in SASE can help your organization automate costly and complex IT operations with AI-powered digital experience management. Go to paloaltonetworks.com/engage/sassy-signature-moment or see the show notes for that link for episode 468. And just a reminder, we've got even more free technical podcasts, including our new security podcast, Packet Protector, Network Automation Nerds with Eric Cho, and as I mentioned, Heavy Strategy with Greg and Jonna. All right, let's dive into the news. Before we do, we have a follow-up, an FU from a listener in a recent episode. Greg and I talked about reports that undersea cables in the Red Sea may have been cut by Houthis in Yemen. The Houthis, which have been attacking shipping in the Red Sea, denied cutting the cables. A listener alerted us to a LinkedIn post from someone who works in the cable industry who says the outages are more likely to have been caused by a ship anchor dragging on the seafloor. That ship was damaged by rocket fire from the Houthis. I haven't been able to independently confirm that the ship anchor is the cause, but if so, the cable cuts appear to have been collateral damage from the rocket attack.
That's not a surprise at all, Drew, because as a sometimes sailor, one of the things that I've noticed is anchors dragging is very, very common. And I can certainly envision that scenario where the ship is damaged by a rocket and dragging anchors. So I would go with, I think your listener is correct.
Yeah, I would guess that's the proximate cause because after the ship was attacked, they did drop the anchor and abandon ship. So it is just out there drifting. And we know that anchors can cause damage to these undersea cables. And I think the larger point is that, global conflict and geopolitics can have a downstream impact on your jobs. That's why we talk about them here on an IT podcast. And if you want to do your own research on this or dig into it more, we'll have the links to these stories and that LinkedIn post in the show notes. All right, let's move on to the news. AT&T suffered a massive outage on its cell network on February 22nd. It began around 3 a.m. And was fully resolved somewhere after 7 and 11 hours. Tens of thousands of AT&T users were affected. Significantly so was FirstNet. This is a first responder specific service that AT&T runs. It contracts with the First Responder Network Authority. This is an independent agency under the U.S. Department of Commerce's National Telecommunications and Information Administration. So lots of panic, lots of concern, lots of frustrated customers.
Well, I would just file this one under plus a change here because AT&T said that the real culprit was its own network expansion project. Someone working on the project applied the wrong software update and everything went south. If you're old enough to have been bouncing around in the industry back when frame relay was a thing, the first AT&T frame relay network had an absolutely identical outage where somebody pushed an update, took down the network, despite the fact that AT&T has very solid processes for not doing that. Periodically, someone didn't get the memo and does it wrong or doesn't realize they're on the production network when they're doing something. And we go kablooey. So this is no deep surprise, although I think there was a lot more angst and agita because people speculated about cyber attacks and cyber terrorism and solar flares and all these things, any of which could have been the cause.
Right.
But I think, Occam's razor and AT&T both agree that it was just, fat-fingered update.
Yep. Yeah. So hug ops to the engineer or engineers who pushed that change that crashed the network. That's a very bad day for everyone involved. And I think the positive thing is this outage is news because it doesn't happen often. So that's something to keep in mind. The thing I find alarming is that the immediate reaction was, is this cyber attack? Is this cyber attack? Are we under attack? Which to me is a signal that the industry and government agencies who monitor this kind of thing recognize how exposed we are and how rickety our national infrastructure is. So that gives me a little bit of worry.
Yep. And me as well. But my bigger worry, and I'll just throw in a side note, is that even though everybody worries about cybersecurity, there are clear indications that in 2024, we're not doing enough about it. Some of our primary research shows that enterprise organizations, more than half of them are keeping their budgets flat, which is a terrible idea because it indicates they think cybersecurity is a relatively solved problem, and it's not. And we have found that there's a one-to-one correlation between spending more and having a stronger security stance. Obviously, you want to spend on the right things, but 2024 is not the year to keep your cybersecurity budget flat.
Right. A couple other things. There's several federal investigations going on into this. The New York State Attorney General also said that she is going to launch an investigation. And AT&T said it was going to roll out a credit to affected customers. Turns out that credit is $5, which I find a little underwhelming.
Yeah, you can't even get a decent coffee at Starbucks anymore for $5. I can't believe it, but it's true. That said, that's just another, I will highlight the bigger picture here again. That's just another example of why getting credits is a terrible idea. So if you're negotiating a telecom relationship for your organization, toss the credits out. They are not going to be worth the cost of the business disruption that'll happen if you have a major outage. Instead, the clause you want to include in your contract should have something along the rights to terminate the relationship without penalty.
Yep. And just to put that $5 number against some other numbers, CEO John Stankey's total annual compensation in 2022 was just over $22 million. $2.4 million of that is cash. $5.3 million was bonuses. The rest comes from stock options. I'm curious if he's going to get that bonus in 2024. Probably. But I sort of wonder, you know, what the PR value would have been if the CEO had said, you know what, we're going to give customers an even bigger credit for this outage, and I'm not going to take a bonus this year. I wonder what the would that be worth the PR move?
I don't think so, because I don't care whether it's $5 or $50. It doesn't compensate you for not being able to reach the people you need to be able to reach. I mean, look, we're talking first responders, guys.
Yeah.
That's why credits are stupid. That's my full statement here.
All right. AT&T isn't the only mobile provider to have issues this month. Last week, Vodafone customers across Britain began reporting outages for internet and mobile phones.
And this very specifically around 10 p.m. Greenwich time on 28 February, Vodafone users across Britain were complaining about the outages in London, Manchester, Liverpool, Birmingham, Leeds, Bristol, Edinburgh, and Glasgow. The last reports came in just after 9 a.m. GMT, and Vodafone was in the process of completing the shutdown of its 3G services. And they say, well, a small number of locations are still up and running on 3G, mostly rural or places that have UK security significance, which will have 3G. So far, they haven't made any statements. As of 4:30 p.m. GMT on the 29th, there was no statement on the outages. But let's take a wild guess that it is also a process issue.
So you're thinking as part of turning down these 3G services, something might have happened that caused this outage. And again, we haven't had official confirmation from Vodafone as of the recording on March 1st, Friday, around 9:30 in the morning.
Yeah, we have not. So we are merely speculating, but I'll go out on a limb and say it's probably a process issue, because 99 times out of 100 network outages are process issues, which kind of brings us to the next news item. Right, Drew?
Yeah, so there's a Swedish company called Elisa Polystar. It's a subsidiary of a Finnish telecom company. It's focused on delivering zero-touch knock capabilities to communications companies. It's collaborating with Wind River. You've probably heard of Wind River. It's a major player in service provider operation software. And 4iG, this is a major communications provider in Hungary and the Balkans. Wind River is going to incorporate Elisa Polystar solutions under the cover of its Studio Conductor solution to provide, quote, visibility, network tracing, and troubleshooting. And Johnny, you're wondering if a system like this had been in place, maybe we wouldn't be having these outages?
That's kind of the speculation here. And in fact, if you had, you know, the real provocative question is, could AI have prevented the outage entirely? They claim, Elisa Polystar claims, can handle 100% of alarms, resulting in a 71% reduction in network incidents and 79% faster resolution. We're talking a full lights out knock. Very interesting to speculate. I kind of doubt that it would have worked, because, you know, as you pointed out, Drew, these are kind of once in a generation types of outages. But if their software functions as they claim, and that's always a big if,
yes,
there's a good chance that such a solution could have diagnosed the problem sooner and speeded the resolution.
Yeah, these NOC solutions, software-defined solutions, do make big promises, and always we should take those promises with a grain of salt. But again, I think we're not sure if this would have helped, but it is a new product out there if you are running a communication service provider and are interested.
Yep. And I would just add to that, that lights out knock is going to be the future. We're just not there yet. We're not in the future yet.
Moving on, Broadcom has announced it's integrating products from the VMware side of the house with the Symantec side of the house to produce a new SASE offering. The SD-WAN part is VMware VeloCloud, and Symantec is bringing the cloud-delivered security services. The new offering is called VMware VeloCloud SASE, secured by Symantec. That is just a mouthful.
Well, and you've got to give a hand it to Broadcom that they have one buzzword bingo here with the with the SASE name in its portfolio, and they've really packed it, you know, packed all the names they possibly could in there. VMware, SASE, Symantec, and VeloCloud. So I think, you know, this is an interesting move. Broadcom's calling this a single vendor SASE solution, which I guess is technically true because they've integrated all the different vendors. But under the covers, I suspect there's some seams on that integration to hook everything together. That said, very few SASE providers build every component of the stack themselves. Basically, Cato and Fortinet are the only ones I can think of, Drew. I don't know if you have others. But the general idea is that it's full stack with firewalling, IPS, malware, web gateway, and everything else.
Yeah, so that's what you would expect from a cloud-delivered security service. And now Broadcom has the components to say, yes, we have a SASE because we can give you the SD-WAN to get you into those cloud-delivered security services. It lets them put that check mark on the buzzword bingo sheet.
Yes, exactly. So pay attention to that if you're in the market for a SASE solution and you're looking for full service or full suite. But keep in mind that issue about the seams from the integration, because I've never in my life seen a seamless integration between multiple vendors' products.
Yeah, yeah. That's, I guess, why we're sort of picking on the single vendor solution, because, yes, technically you're paying one person, but it's products coming from two different vendors that they're having to put together, which, as you mentioned, isn't all that different in the industry. A lot of other competitors are doing the same thing. And to my mind, in a SASE solution, the SD-WAN part isn't really where the difficulties are. If you're looking at SASE, I think you should be focusing on the cloud-delivered security part. How robust are the security capabilities? How well integrated are there? How much latency is it going to introduce? Does your traffic have to get decrypted multiple times? Does it pass it through various security services? How many physical locations does your SASE provider have? Because the where that traffic is getting shunted can also have an impact on performance, depending on where your endpoints are. So a lot of things to think about. And I think if you're going to be looking at a SASE solution, you really want to focus in on that cloud-delivered security side. I think that's where all the bugs are.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So yeah, take it with a grain of salt. But hey, at least Broadcom got its buzzword bingo.
That's right. All right, a quick break to tell you about our sponsor today, Palo Alto Networks. You can see how ZTNA 2.0, Cloud Secure Web Gateway, and SD-WAN deliver exceptional security and ROI. 2024 is a year when companies will need to do more with less as businesses grapple with economic uncertainty. It's more critical than ever to consolidate fragmented security and networking solutions to reduce operational complexity and costs. Palo Alto Networks has produced a virtual event so you can learn how the latest innovations in SASE can help your organization do things like automate costly and complex IT ops with AI-powered digital experience management, connect and secure branch offices and the hybrid workforce with SD-WAN, ZTNA 2.0, and Cloud Secure Web Gateway, and unlock better ROI through consolidation of point solutions with Prisma SASE. You can go to paloaltonetworks.com/engage/sasE-signature-moment or see the show notes for episode 468 for the link. One more time, that's paloaltonetworks.com/engage/sasE-signature-moment. All right, back to the news. Aviva, they build automotive networking products to support capabilities like self-driving. They've announced multi-gigabit Ethernet devices for the auto industry, including Ethernet PHYs, switches, and bridges, including 10 and 100 gig Ethernet switches. And the goal is to provide high-speed connections between sensors and vehicle computers. And I have to say, Jonna, this is not an area I'm familiar with. You brought this story to the table. What's on your mind here?
Well, I just think it's very interesting that finally, after all these years, we're using standardized technology, e.g. Ethernet, inside inside cars for automotive applications. I think that's actually important because that indicates the bandwidth required to share information inside the car. But I have to say my initial response on reading this was, oh God, I don't even want to know what the training requirements are for the technicians, because as it so happened, I just got my car serviced over the weekend, and some of the lights had gone out, and the customer service person at the dealership was surprised when I asked him to check the alternator, because he couldn't figure out what the connection was between the alternator and the lights. And I'm like, yo, the alternator might give you a voltage spike, and the voltage spike could burn out the lights. And he was like, oh, electricity. So I'm like, okay, this will get really interesting when they're troubleshooting the Ethernet.
Oh boy, yes.
But that said, I think that's exactly what Aviva is trying to do, is to is to reduce the complexity of in-car networks by reducing the number of controllers and the amount of manual integration, and also the overall weight. Weirdly enough, it's important in cars of the networking infrastructure. So they anticipate that they're going to make cars lighter by several kilograms. Kilogram is 2.2 pounds, in case you're thinking in imperial system. And we have a little bit more information in the links alongside the show.
Yeah, so Ethernet and cars, it's I'm not sure I feel about that, but I'm not surprised either because Ethernet always seems to win. Speaking of which, Spirent, they make networking testing gear. They've announced a test solution designed to emulate AI workloads over Ethernet. AI workloads have unique requirements that make them sensitive to latency and congestion. And at the same time, there's a growing effort to kind of optimize Ethernet for AI workloads as an alternative to InfiniBand. Spirent says the new offering can emulate high-density GPU workloads at 400 gig. Spirent says, quote, it enables customers to test their Ethernet fabrics in their existing test environments without having to go to considerable expense of building new XPU server-equipped labs. So AI creating new opportunities here for everyone, including Spirent.
Yeah. And I think about this, the main thing is this is more about infrastructure to handle AI, which I think is an underemphasized area. And I give Spirent props for paying attention to this and actually delivering on something that I think will be very useful.
Yeah. My understanding is that it costs a lot of money to do the kind of AI inference training that you would build a data center fabric for. And again, it's very sensitive to latency, congestion, and so on. There's issues like job completion time that the AI workload can't continue until the very last calculation has reached the next GPU. And so you want that Ethernet network to be perfect and be up and running and not have any issues. If you're spending all this money, you might as well spend a little bit more and then test it to make sure it's actually going to deliver. I think, yeah, it's a smart opportunity for Spirent to jump in on.
And I just want to highlight once again, the AI training environments are increasingly leaning on Ethernet instead of InfiniBand or other traditional HPC protocols. So that's another indication, just like the previous news item, that Ethernet is continuing its 30, 40, 50 year takeover of communications protocols.
Absolutely.
And with that, Drew, I also have noted that HPE announced its Q1 24 results Thursday afternoon. Here are some key highlights. HPE announced the results for the first quarter of its fiscal 2024. The company brought in revenues of $6.8 billion, which is down 14% over last year. Net income was $387 million, which is down 23% year over year. If you look at the business unit results, HPE's server biz was down $3.4 billion. Was down 23% year over year. Intelligent Edge was up 3% and $1.2 billion. And Hybrid Cloud was $1.2 billion, down 10%. So it's not a great quarter, but HPE did beat Wall Street estimates. What are your thoughts on this, Drew?
Yeah, really not a great quarter. You look at the headline and the first couple of paragraphs of the press release, and you think, oh, wow, HPE did great. And then you actually dig into the details and you're like, oh, no, they didn't. But that's how press releases go. But the fact that they were able to beat Wall Street estimates made Antonio Neri, the CEO, happy. And he also said the company continues to grow its recurring revenue, which he takes as a positive signal for HPE's GreenLake strategy, which is essentially a sort of pay for what you use model, a la like the public cloud, but on-prem. Also, I'll note that every tech CEO, I think, is contractually obligated to mention AI, and Neri met that obligation. He said in a press release, quote, despite a mixed quarter, I remain very confident that our focus on customer-centric innovation and our track record of operational discipline will allow us to capitalize on the significant market opportunities in AI, as well as across edge and hybrid cloud. Of course, HPE doesn't really have an AI story, which I think is, again, one of the reasons I've said this several times, that it actually bought Juniper. With Juniper's Mist AI, it can now tell customers and Wall Street that it has an AI strategy and an AI play.
All right. That's about all we have, I think, folks.
Yep. So, Jana, that does wrap up our news for this week. If folks want to find out more about you, where can they go?
Please hit us up on nemertes.com, N-E-M-E-R-T-E-S. N like Nancy and M like Mary. We do have a contact us form, or you can apply to join our community on the community button.
Yeah. And also I'll mention again, you and Greg Farrow do the Heavy Strategy podcast. It's getting very popular because you guys run the podcast sort of like a debate style. You each take a position on an issue and have at it.
Yes, that is what we do. And I will also put in a little plug for the Slack community that we're running here at Packet Pushers. Please go hit the site, join the Slack, and join the debate. It's a highly technical debate with a lot of geeks arguing network things, my favorite thing in the world. So Come join us.
Yeah, come join the party. I'm Drew Conrad-Murray. You can find me on LinkedIn. I'm also blogging at packandpushers.net. Thanks to our sponsor, Palo Alto Networks. And as always, thank you for joining us for another episode of Network Break. If you'd like the show, please give us a like on Facebook or a recommendation on Apple Podcasts, or share a link with your colleague. As always, thanks for listening.